Hey, what's up, folks, and welcome to The Boss's Desk, where we look out for you, giving you the best in geek news and movie reviews. I'm your host for the day, The Big Boss, and I'm here with my comrade, The Professor.
What's happening, everybody? What's going on?
What's going on, man?
Not much, sir. Not much.
Let's talk about some Justice League today.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Woo! It is with heavy hearts that we come to you today. Oh, man. Like, all right. So,
let's be fair.
Yeah.
Let's be fair.
Yeah.
I'll start right off. I didn't hate the movie. I really didn't.
Okay.
But I didn't really like it either.
Right.
It was kind of that middle of the road. Like, there's some stuff in the movie I really enjoyed. Bits and pieces I thought were good little parts. But there was a lot of bad, too, in my opinion. Yeah. There was a lot of bad, too. Just some... Yeah. So,
like, it's really what did you... It's like, it's no way to get around it. It's like, for me, it was like, I've been asked this question a couple of times this week and last week, so I kind of have my answer, like, right down packed. For me, it was so-so. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't the greatest. It wasn't the worst. But there were definitely a lot of areas where there could have been some great strides and improvements, and they didn't. It's like,
yep.
Overall, I felt the movie was just so rushed. You know what I'm saying? There was really no time to digest any of the key plot points that were going on. And then the new characters that we get introduced to, we don't even get a chance to really, like, get personal. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, all right, well, I'm going to just hang on for the ride. And it's just like, bop, bop. Here's a point. End of the movie. Oh,
yep.
Okay. All right. You know what I'm saying?
My phrase to anybody who has asked me is, I said, well, it wasn't Suicide Squad bad.
Yeah. Oh, no.
But it wasn't Wonder Woman good either. Right. So I felt exactly the same way you did. I thought it was really rushed. You could really tell the different parts in the movie where Snyder ended and Whedon began.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could really see a lot of that very, very obviously.
Yeah.
And I thought, and I realized there was really no way to do this, but if they really wanted to do it, ultimately their best option probably would have been to scrap it, start over, and let Whedon do the whole thing. Now, right. Obviously, it's unrealistic because all the money you would lose and whatnot.
Yeah,
but
it would cost.
And obviously, Snyder had to step down. You know, the unfortunate circumstances that he went through, he didn't have an option. I just don't think it worked quite as smoothly as they were hoping it was going to. I think your next best option would have been trying to find someone who's probably a little closer to Zack Snyder's way of thinking and his way of directing and whatnot to do the movie. As much as I love Joss Whedon for the things that he's done, he's much more on the opposite end of the spectrum than Snyder is. Snyder tends to be more dark and more brooding kind of movies, and Whedon, while he has his very dark moments, tends to be more on the brighter side and the comedic side. And it just didn't seem to fit, you know, for me in the movie, the way things, you know, flipped around. Like, the best example for me, that might be kind of a spoiler, I don't know if I should say that.
We can hold it.
Something Superman says at the end of the movie, in the midst of the big fight, that to me was a very Whedon thing, mm-hmm. and 100% out of place.
Yeah.
Just nowhere near. You might know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, yeah.
But just didn't fit the moment it was in. Perfect thing for Superman to say, not at that moment.
Right.
So it was just too obvious, I think, in a lot of spots where the difference was. I think you find somebody who's a little more like Snyder, a little more on the darker side, a little more on the brooding side. I think the movie's a little more coherent, a little easier to deal with.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, I don't have anything personal against Zack Snyder. I just don't think his movies, as far as these movies, are very good.
Yeah.
And I think it kind of shows a lot here.
Yeah. And you know, we were talking about Snyder and his direction earlier. And, like, I hold by the fact that I think Snyder is a very stubborn storyteller. Like, the way that he tells his stories, that's the way that he wants to do it. Nobody else can tell it but him. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And what happens is nobody can kind of tie into your vision because you're so tight about it. You know what I'm saying? So it's like the way that this came off. I mean, it was the same. It came in the same vein as, what was it? The Watchmen and, you know, 300. But it just like some of those stories, it played off well because that's the story that you needed to tell. For 300, right, that was perfection. You know what I'm saying? For Watchmen, there a lot of fans expressed that it could have been a lot better. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, for this whole DCEU that he's been helming for the greater part of a couple films, it's just, you know, it's not working.
He's just not a good fit. Yeah. He just, at least to me, he's just not a good fit.
Yeah. So with all that being said, like, what do you think? What do you think people should do as far as if they're interested in watching the film? Do they go watch it or should they not go see this?
I mean, I guess it really depends. If you liked Batman versus Superman, if you're a DC fan, it's definitely probably worth for you to go see in the theater, especially if you liked Batman versus Superman. It's mm-hmm. it's going to be very similar to that for you to go see.
Yeah.
It's got some really cool spots, some really cool hits as far as DC, for DC fans specifically. Some moments of things that happen.
Yeah.
That will make you happy to see it. But if you're a casual fan and you really didn't like Batman versus Superman that much and you're kind of on the fence as to whether you think it's worth seeing in the theaters, for you, it's probably not worth going to see. It's just, you know, I always kind of judge it, would I pay to see it a second time? And I, for this one, I don't know. Like, look, when Suicide Squad came out and I saw it the first time, I didn't pay for it because a friend of mine had paid. It was his turn to pay for the movie tickets. And I'm glad I didn't pay for it, and I would never pay for the movie. Suicide Squad is one of the only superhero movies that I don't own on Blu-ray or DVD in some fashion. And I own Green Lantern.
Oh.
If that gives you any kind of indication as to how I felt about Suicide Squad.
Wow.
Yeah, I think I got Green Lantern for like a fiver, you know, at a Best Buy one day. And I was like, what the hell? But Suicide Squad does not grace my collection. So that kind of puts that on a level for people to understand.
Yeah.
This is one that I may purchase at some point when it comes out, or may put on a list for, you know, a holiday of some kind. But I don't think I would go back to the theater to see it again because it just didn't grab me enough that way for me to actually go pay to see it again that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of how I would say it. Like, again, if you're a DC fan and you like Batman versus Superman and you, for some reason that I'll never understand, like Suicide Squad, go see it because you'll enjoy it.
Yeah.
But if you're a casual fan who is on the fence because you didn't really like Batman versus Superman, you didn't like Suicide Squad, you probably won't like this either.
Yeah. I'm going to be a little bit more forgiving. I'm not going to say rush out to go see it. I'm not going to say that at all. You can wait and go see this on an off day, catch a matinee, just so that you can kind of be, because I mean, I think it's good that everybody's kind of a part of this conversation. You know what I'm saying? Because this is not a clear, this is not a Marvel versus DC type of thing. Like, this is purely a DC, like, we just want y'all to tell good stories. And at this point, we're just not, it just doesn't seem like we're getting it. There are some really solid points. There's some good Easter, like, as a DC fan, there's some good Easter eggs. It feels like a comic book. It's like, even as you're watching the movie, it feels very much like a comic book. There's some really good moments with the team. There are some decent facets as far as, oh, I can't wait till they explore this, or I can't wait till they explore that. You know what I'm saying? But the movie as a whole just really didn't tell the story that they could have told, and it doesn't get you invested in the story or the characters in the way that a good movie should. As a DC fan, I enjoy the Easter eggs. I enjoy those good moments. As a movie fan, as a cinema fan, I just wanted some more. I wanted more. Like, I didn't get enough here, and it wasn't enough for me to be like, these characters matter to me. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, I really couldn't do it. So if I tell anybody, I'm like, hey, you know what? If you're a DC fan and you curious and you have to know what's going on, I say go check it out. Catch a matinee, temper your expectations. You'll have a really good time. If you're looking for more substance, I would say hold off. I'm personally going to give this another shot when the DVD Blu-ray comes out, because what I'm hearing is that there's supposed to be a director's cut for Justice League. And the director's cut is supposed to have possibly up to another hour of footage that we're not getting in the film. So if
that'd be interesting.
Yeah, if that's the case, it may change the whole direction and feel of that film when we get to see the director's cut. I know a lot of people say that. A lot of people said that about Blade Runner. When it first came out, the original release, it was okay. The director's cut is what really made it a classic. You know what I'm saying? So I'm hoping that it works out in the same way for Justice League. So I'm going to wait and see it again when it comes out on video.
So, I think that's fair.
Yeah. So, you know, right there, that's you know, no spoiler free, no spoilers review for you guys of how we felt about Justice League. Now, Here's the good part, the juicy part. We are about to get in it. We're about to dig in, explore these characters, explore some of these moments, and talk about them in detail. So this will be spoiler filled.
I'm
warning you. Do not watch. Do not listen to this any further if you're not trying to be spoiled. If you want to watch the movie and you want to see all of this without getting any information, go ahead and press pause. Stop. Get out of here. Go do something else. Go watch the movie. Stop this right now. But if you continue after I count down from five, that's your own problem. The disclaimer is out there. We do this for legal purposes because I'm not having nobody call me for some money. I don't got it. I don't have it.
Nobody's getting any money out of it just because we spoil. If you listen to it at this point and you get spoiled, that's your own damn problem.
You know what I'm saying? So here we go. We count down. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Here we go. We are in spoiler territory.
Spoiler mode.
Testing it out. Am I on? Darth Vader is Luke's father. Oh my God.
Oh, it's terrible. Oh, it's terrible.
I'm saying. I was like, I got that off my chest. Ooh, I feel good.
So yeah, all right. So spoilers.
Yeah.
So there are good beats in the movie. Yeah. I can't say they're not. The scene with the flashbacks. At one point, there is a flashback scene of the original time Steppenwolf, the main villain, tried to take over the Earth with the mother boxes, which is the premise of this movie as well. Very cool scene where they show the different worlds of people who came together to try to fight him.
Yeah.
And in the middle of this scene is a shot of, you hear Wonder Woman's voiceover because she's explaining the story, I believe, to Batman. And she says, even aliens from another world came to help us. As she says that, we have the shots that everybody's looking for of the Green Lantern Corps. I think it might have just been one lantern. I don't remember exactly.
Yeah, it was just one lantern. And he was like, it was two. It was actually two we got to see.
Was it two? Okay.
Yeah, one was in the air fighting, and then the other one was on the ground because he got taken down.
He got taken down. So the one lantern ends up getting killed by Steppenwolf.
Mm-hmm.
And as if that's not cool enough to actually see the lanterns in this scene, what happens next is the ring slowly floats off the lantern's finger, whips a circle around Steppenwolf, and goes launching up into the sky like they do when it goes to find the new user, which is a really cool scene, I think. A nice little throw-in.
Yeah.
So that's one of the cooler scenes in the movie.
Yeah.
There are some other very interesting beats that they have. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones that I really like.
In that same scene too, I think there's another beat where they say, I'm not sure if she says they got help from the gods or if they got help from the power of the gods, but we basically watch this figure shoot lightning out of their hands. I'm assuming that this could either be one of two characters. This could be Zeus or this could be the DC Shazam or Captain Marvel.
I think it's supposed to be Zeus.
It's supposed to be Zeus.
Because she does say the gods even got involved.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the gods is shooting the fiery bow and arrow. And if you watch the credits, it actually lists them as Artemis, which is the name of the I guess it's Greek archer.
Yeah.
God. I don't know as much about the Greek gods as much, but I know that was one of the Greek gods. So I tried to watch the credits to see who that was credited as. I didn't see a Zeus come across, but I think that's who it's supposed to be.
Okay.
I think it's supposed to be Zeus.
Yeah.
the scene where they resurrect Superman after they've resurrected him and he's kind of not sure who he is.
Yeah.
That scene in general is kind of a little strange. The best part of the scene to me is where they're all in front of him and they're all kind of trying to restrain him. The Flash tries to take off behind him and he thinks he's going to get behind him, sneak up. And all of a sudden they pan back to Superman and his eyes just kind of turn. And then his head slowly starts to turn to see the Flash. And the Flash realizes, oh hell, he can see me. This is going to be a problem. That's a very cool scene.
Yeah, that is a very cool scene.
There were definitely some things that were neat. The very, very end where they show Cyborg actually go to the more traditional look because he can apparently control.
Yeah.
You know, how he looks was kind of cool. I like the way they handle Aquaman going through the water where he's not actually swimming. He's almost kind of flying through the water. I thought was kind of cool.
That was cool.
The whole scene in Atlantis is kind of cool. The scene on Themyscira is very cool.
The
whole premise of them trying to keep the Mother Box away from Steppenwolf.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Very good beats. You know, that definitely had some very cool parts, but the rest of the movie some of the stuff just felt so out of place.
Yeah, and it's like the downside, even with some of those good scenes, is that even those good scenes have their downsides to them. You know what I'm saying? So you got this whole beginning scene that gives us this history of Steppenwolf coming here to try and take over the world before and failed. And you get introduced to all of these characters and they make these plugs to aliens. And it's like, the regular general audiences aren't going to know who any of these characters are. We just hang on and hope for the best. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, while everybody else in the theater is super excited, general audience is like, what does that mean? What is that? Is that something I should know? And it's like,
yeah, exactly.
You know, you feel bad because you want them to be a part of it too, but now they're isolated because they don't know all the information. You know what I'm saying? That's a downside. I feel like in storytelling, like you have to take into consideration. You never want to at any point make your audience feel like they're alone now. You know what I'm saying? You want them to share in that experience.
I kind of got in it, not in a nasty way, but I kind of had a back and forth with a friend of mine who, you know, one friend had posted on my Facebook about how, you know, they really could use a little bit more backstory to some of these characters, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Another friend of mine said, these are characters who've existed since the 40s in the comic books. You really want backstory and all these characters have been around for so long? And I said, well, yeah, because you need to know who these people are. Like, look, you don't need a backstory for Batman. You don't need a backstory for Superman. Don't really need a backstory for Wonder Woman, mostly because they just had her movie a year ago. But you need to know who Aquaman is. You need to know who the Flash is. You need to know who Cyborg is. You need to know how they became who they are.
Yeah.
Outside, at one point in the movie, Cyborg turning into Flash and going, so you got struck by lightning? Like, that doesn't tell us anything.
Yeah, like, oh, okay. And basically what it's banking on is that everybody's watched the CW series. That's what it's banking on. You know what I'm saying?
That really is. Yeah.
And it's like, you can't, we already were up, like most of the people who watched the CW series were already kind of like upset and tight because this is not Grant Gustin. So is this really the Flash? How do we take this person? Yada, yada, yada. But even if you're open to it, it's like, okay, even if you're open to it, what if you just haven't seen the Flash? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, they depended a lot on other people doing exploration instead of actually making a movie. You know what I'm saying? And that's you can't expect audiences to be connected to characters that they don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You know, part of his argument was that he feels that, and we kind of went back and forth and he kind of explained his stance to make it make a little more sense. But initially what he was saying was he felt like people should have to do some kind of research, you know, before you go see these movies, if you really want to know what's going on. And I said, you can't make a movie expecting everybody to do research. You just can't.
Yeah, like,
who? The hardcores are going to know who he is. So they're not going to need to research it. But the general person out in the public who's got maybe a little kid who also wants to go see superhero movies, not going to sit down on the internet and go, Google, who is Aquaman? Who is Cyborg? Besides the fact that you wouldn't know that his name is Cyborg, because they never call him that in the movie.
Yeah.
They call him the Aquaman, I think, at one point, but that's about it.
Yeah.
But they're not going to sit down and try to figure out who he is before going to see the movie. It defeats the whole purpose.
Yeah.
And you really still don't exactly know anything about Cyborg. As to, you know that he got his abilities from the mother box that his father used, but you don't know what it did or what it's really doing or how, you know, how exactly it did what it's doing. It's just weird kind of little things that they almost expect you to understand. And it's just not the way to do it, you know, because you've got this whole group of people who are going to the movie thinking they're going to see the Flash, and they realize they look up, it's not the guy from the TV show. They're going to go, I don't know who that is.
Yeah. So I'm supposed to be connected to this. Barry
Allen? Yeah. How does this, like, this doesn't make any sense. So just some of the assumptions that they take as far as, you know, you'll know who he is, you'll figure it out. It doesn't work that way. And it kind of makes for a worse movie, I think, that way, when you do things like that. Like, it kind of, another one of my buddies said that the characters almost felt kind of hollow because you really don't know much about them because there's really nothing to them. And he's right.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of oomph to these characters. You know, it's like the whole scene in the beginning with Wonder Woman is very cool.
Oh,
where she breaks in and she's beating the terrorist down serves zero purpose to the entire movie.
Yeah. Like, who?
It doesn't have a function to the movie. Like, there's those terrorists.
I didn't realize that.
This terrorist who stops never come back in any way, shape, or form.
Nope.
You never find out who they are. You never find out what their purpose is. They're threatening to blow up four city blocks with themselves inside, and you never know why. It's strictly a scene meant to show her cool powers, which I don't know where all of a sudden she becomes, you know, like the fastest woman alive. I don't remember that ever being her ability. I could be wrong on that. I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
But the whole scene is just a self-serving Wonder Woman scene. It doesn't fit the movie in any way, shape, or form. It doesn't even need to be there. The first time we see Batman, he's stopping a thief from, sort of, who's broken into somebody's apartment, is coming out with a huge sack full of stuff. He uses the guy to grab a parademon, and then he lets the guy go.
Yeah.
Like, it's some of the most, two of the most non-Batman things ever happen. He talks out loud calling Alfred by name, which, you know, the guy's going to hear you. Now, is he going to be able to put two and two together and say, wait a minute, Alfred, could he be talking about Bruce Wayne's butler? Probably not. But Batman's never going to say the real name of somebody out loud.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or in person, which they do the entire movie as well.
Yeah.
When Superman comes to life, they're calling each other Barry. They're calling each other Bruce. They're calling him Clark. You know, it's like,
No code names.
You know, call him what he is. But then, you know, he catches the criminal. He's got him hanging by, you know, his bat claw, whatever you want to call it, with the wire on it. And he just lets the guy go. He runs away from him.
Yeah.
After the demon has already blown itself up, so there's nothing left for him to go after the demon. He just runs away from the guy.
Yeah. It's actually kind of funny that scene, I was talking to a friend of mine today, and that scene is beat for beat the same scene from Justice League War, the animated movie.
So the
way that it starts is like Batman knows that the parademons are coming, and he's trying to like find them, and he catches this criminal and does the same thing to bring bring the parademons out or something like that. He was tracking this guy, so When he does it, it goes beat for beat. The only difference is, I believe Batman made sure that dude still was tied up and he got caught. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just don't know what it is between this live action and you know, you got the TV and you got animated, but TV and animated DC are crushing it right now.
Absolutely, yeah.
But live action is like they can't really batten down how to tell a cohesive story. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, we miss out, and I'm still waiting for the world's greatest detective to show up. I'm still waiting for that.
100%.
You know what I'm saying? And it's like, we get to see Batman's prowess, his physical stature and presence as a hero. But, you know, even that small little scene, Barry gets in the car after Bruce finds him and finds out who he is. Like, these little things that people really like take for granted. Like, Bruce knows who Barry is and he knows exactly where he's staying. You know what I'm saying? There's these little things that we kind of get nods to, but not official. We just assume that it's because Bruce Wayne has all this tech. he can find whoever he wants to find. And so they get in the car and Barry asks him what's his superpower. And Bruce looks at him and says he's rich. Now, it's funny. That's funny. But there's more to Batman than just the strength, than just the gadgets that he has. Like, these gadgets, these tools are all developed by him. Like, people don't understand. Like, they're co-developed by him. And some of the his gadgets he gets help with from Lucius Fox. But it's like, yo, Batman is much more than what they gave him credit for in the film. And it was just like, it's just sad to see him like that.
So the original scene, I get the point of it. You know, with the whole parademons, they can smell fear. I get why they did that, because it comes back in a silly fashion, in my opinion, at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
But
that was that's an apocalypse moment. And we'll talk about that. Yeah.
But one of my other friends, again, I'll go, you know, because I talked to a lot of people about this, he made a fantastic point also that one of the scariest things about Batman, about the character, in any level you look at, comics, cartoons, no matter what you do, he is, let's call him the ultimate Boy Scout, in the sense that he's always prepared.
Always.
He's always got a contingency plan or some kind of plan of some kind. In this movie, you've basically got a guy who doesn't know what to do, and he's grasping at straws, and he's trying to put together a group, and he's not sure how to put the group together, and he's not sure he's going to be able to get them together, and then he doesn't know what to do to stop it, and he's legitimately afraid. You can see he's legitimately afraid, and that, again, not a very Batman trait, to be afraid of anything.
Right.
You know, when they're on the roof with Commissioner Gordon, how many of them are you? Not enough. You can tell he's afraid. Like, there's just a feeling that he's unsure of what's going to happen. That's never really the Batman way. So the fact that he is completely... Now, look, how do you prepare for a space demon coming down to Earth trying to, you know, pick up these mother boxes and take over the entire world? I don't know. But that's always been the scariest part about him, is that he's had a way to do it.
Yeah.
And in this movie, there's no way to do it.
Nah.
And the other part of that, to me, is... And you and I think talked about this briefly as well. Of all the people who should be against resurrecting Superman,
right?
He's the guy who should be the one who says, "No freaking way are we doing this. We don't know what." Because, so again, it's a spoiler-filled podcast. They use a mother box that they've obtained from Cyborg to take Superman to the Kryptonian ship, to the regeneration pod that somehow created Doomsday and Batman versus Superman. And they're going to bring him back to life using the mother box. How they know that's going to work, I have no idea, outside of that it, you know, created Cyborg. And they're going to use it to create to bring Superman back to life. The whole thing is Batman's idea. Everybody else is against it.
Yeah.
Well, I shouldn't say that.
Well,
Aquaman and Wonder Woman
are against it.
Everybody else is for it.
Yeah. Flash is just along for the ride at this point.
Flash along for the ride. Yeah. Yeah. And we'll get into him a little bit too. But of all people, you know, like the point you brought up as far as his experience with Ra's al Ghul.
Right.
You think of all people, Batman would want to go, hell no, we're not bringing him back.
No resurrection of dudes. I've been there.
No,
I've seen
how this movie ends. You know, you would think he'd be the one against it. Now, I get the idea being that he still feels guilty from the first movie. He feels like he's the one who ended up killing Superman. I get it. But his character is not one that would be, let's use the completely unknown technology that we know nothing about, combined with the other unknown technology that we know nothing about, to maybe bring a ultimate power alien known as Superman back from potentially the dead, when we have no idea what's going to happen when he comes back to life.
Mm-hmm.
And the only contingency plan I have is Lois Lane, who, should Superman come back as some kind of mindless zombie, would die instantly. That whole premise to me just didn't make any sense. There had to have been a better way to go about bringing Superman back.
Yeah, to get to that point, there could have been a ton of different ways. There could have been a ton of ways they could have did it. I would have been more inclined for them to follow this being a suggestion of Cyborg or something. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And I will tell you what bothered me the most in the long run about that whole scene is that's obviously a very Snyder. To me, I'm pretty sure that's the Snyder scene. He's mm-hmm. the one whose idea is to use the Mother Box to bring Superman back from the dead. Mm-hmm. But he's also on Batman versus Superman, which if you watch the end of Batman versus Superman, they show you the top of Superman's coffin.
Mm-hmm.
They show you the dirt lift off the top and suddenly float in the air like something's going on in the coffin. And then they completely ignore it in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
It never comes back into play. They never even talk about it. They never tell you what it was. You know, is he alive? Is he not alive? What exactly does that mean? We don't care. We're just going to completely ignore the fact that we put that at the end of our movie. And as if that's not weird enough, now we're going to have a scene where Cyborg and the Flash are digging up Superman's grave. What? Like, let's ignore the fact that it would take the Flash 2 seconds to dig a grave, or it would take Cyborg 2 seconds to make his hand into something that could clear all the dirt out of the way.
Right.
They're digging up, they're exhuming a grave site to pull Superman's body out. They never show him ask. They never show them go to Martha Kent and say, hey, this is what we're going to do. They just do it. And
it's not very superhero-y, I guess.
No, exactly. Yeah, it's not a superhero. It's not a very superhero thing to dig up a dead man's grave. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever, the scene. And the scene is awkward because it's the two of them trying to figure out how each other got their powers and that the explanation never comes
about. They're trying to cultivate some kind. And this is what annoys me. This is like, I'll tell you this about every film that I watch. I hate horrible character development. Don't introduce me to characters and give me no backstory. And don't try to develop relationships between these characters who I know nothing about. And basically what they tried to do was make that scene into some kind of bromance scene between Flash and Cyborg. And they don't know each other. We don't know them. So I don't even care about this. I don't even care about this.
It's just such an awkward scene. It's essentially two strangers digging up the body of a dead stranger in the middle of the night. It makes no sense whatsoever. It's just an awkward, awkward scene to have in the middle of it.
Yeah.
You know, and just some of the stuff that I really had huge issues with. Like, one of the other biggest problems I had is the CGI in this movie is terrible.
Yeah, rough.
Like, where was the budget for the CGI? It was awful.
Yeah.
Like, you look at... Now, look, I understand Marvel and Disney have ILM Studios, which is probably the best in the world at creating CGI and making these things look lifelike. So if you look at Thanos, we use him as a comparison to Steppenwolf, even though it's not really the same character. Mm-hmm. Thanos looks like it could actually be a real thing when you see it on screen.
Right. I mean, let's be for real. Like, the Hulk looks like he could exist in this world. You know what I'm saying?
100%. Yeah. Then you look at Steppenwolf, and it just looks like it's animated, which it is, but it looks that way, and it shouldn't. There should be something to it that almost makes your mind question whether or not it really is what you think it is. And it's just not there. Like, it looks like a cartoon character slapped in the middle of the movie. And as if that's not bad enough, even if you don't know the story behind Cavill, you know, and his reshoots, you can see there's something very clearly wrong with his face.
It's like, what's going on with his face? Like, yo, so I'm sitting there in the theater. I know exactly what's going on. My girl doesn't know what's going on. And she looks at me. Face just twisted up, just mad. Like, what is wrong with his face? I was like, look, I'll tell you after this because.
So if you don't know the story, what happened? Henry Cavill finishes his Justice League shooting and he goes to film Mission Impossible. So he's got to deal with Paramount. Mm. He's playing a bad guy, I believe, in the movie, and this bad guy has a mustache. Justice League, Warner Brothers calls and says, hey, we need to do some Justice League reshoots. We need to borrow Henry. And Paramount says, that's fine. He's not allowed to shave the mustache. And Warner Brothers goes, what do you mean he's not allowed to shave the mustache? And they go, he's not allowed to shave the mustache. A really prick move by Paramount. Let's be honest.
That was a dick move.
You know, they lay down the line. They lay down the law. He can't shave the mustache. Not allowed to shave the mustache. They didn't want to put a prosthetic mustache on him for whatever reason. Maybe they're afraid it would fall off. I don't know.
Yeah.
But they tell Warner Brothers they can't do it. So Warner Brothers says, okay, we'll just CGI it out. The CGI is so bad. Like, it's smooth. Like, I don't know if it's that it smoothed out his, that entire part of his face, or if it pushes it back too far. Like, in the resurrection scene, there's a very cool part where Batman shows up. He lifts Batman off the ground, and he's laying into him. And he at one point looks him dead in the face with this angry look on his face and says, "Do you bleed?" Had it not been a CGI'd face, it would have been a much cooler scene. It would have had some weight to it.
Yeah, it really would have.
But it's such a close-up on his face, and his upper lip and his upper mouth look so weird, it takes you out of the scene. It just looks so bizarre.
Yeah.
And it was just so poorly done that I don't understand.
Yeah.
I don't know if they would have done better waiting and then letting him shave it. I don't know. I don't know if they had the opportunity to do that. It's just, it looks so, when you know it's there, it's even more obvious. But like you just said, even if you don't know what's there,
yeah,
and you see it, you're like, what the hell is going on? Like, yeah, something's not right with his face.
It's like, you can't really think that a cat like Cavill, I mean, who, let's be for real, like, ladies love this dude. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Ladies love this dude. So they know the details of this man's face and when it's off. So you don't think that you're going to shoot a movie and then reshoot it and then do some wonky CGI and people aren't going to notice it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. The fact that so many, like, general audience members were, like, in disgust looking at the CGI tells you all you need to know. Like, this was not something that they spent their time on or addressed, you know, the right way. I always thought that when Superman was going to come back, he was going to have a full face of hair and a long, like a long do. You know what I'm saying? I was expecting that. I wasn't expecting clean shave Superman. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I don't know how that would happen because he goes in the grave and he's fully shaved. And I don't know that your facial hair stuff continues to grow. Although, you know, he's, you know, in the first movie, we're supposed to think he's not really dead anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just looks so awkward throughout the entire movie when you see him. And he's not, in all honesty, he's not even in the movie that much.
No.
But it's just awkward when you see him because you can tell. You can tell there's something going on with the face there, and it just looks really bizarre.
Yeah.
Was it me,
remember that scene that they kind of sold us on in the trailer with Alfred looking to some mysterious figure saying, you know, He told me
you'd be here or something like that.
Yeah. I hope that you can help us. That wasn't in the movie at all.
Was not in the movie at all. Nope. I have to assume that's when Superman shows up before he shows up in wherever they are in Russia.
Yeah.
To help fight Steppenwolf. I have to assume that was supposed to be there, but they cut it. It wasn't in the movie anywhere.
Yeah.
And that whole bit is awkward. Because he just shows up. Like, there's no lead up. He just shows up, which is, I guess is fine. It's kind of what you expected.
Yeah.
He shows up. The suit is brighter. It's not the dark suit from Man of Steel. It's a brighter red, brighter blue suit, which is fine. Mm-hmm. You know, now we've got almost Boy Scout Superman because he says, you know what, I believe in. I forget what he says. Something. He says, I also believe in justice. And he proceeds to beat the piss out of Steppenwolf. Which is funny because everybody else is fighting him for like 5 minutes. They're all getting their asses kicked. Superman shows up for you know, 30 seconds and beats the tar out of Steppenwolf.
Putting paws on him real quick.
Yeah. Stops in the middle of the fight to go rescue people that showed up in the town out of nowhere. You never see them. Yeah. You know, other than this one odd. I'll come back to that part in a minute.
Yeah. Well, that's its own thing. Yeah.
There was some very odd. Like, there were a lot of beats that didn't make sense. And the one that bothered me the most, and we kind of hit on it a little bit in the last podcast, in the middle of a fight against Steppenwolf, who is this, supposed to be this be-all, end-all, you know, demon from outer space, who's now got the mother boxes together and he's trying to take over the planet.
Right.
Superman, at one point, flies off to rescue people who were living in the town that they were taking over, comes back to fight Steppenwolf, and in the middle of a heated battle says, "Is this man bothering you?" And proceeds to and beat the tar out of him some more. Could not have been a more awkward spot for that line to have been in.
Yeah.
It just didn't fit. And that is very Whedon. That had to have been Whedon. There's no way that's a Zack Snyder
entry. Yeah.
That's what I do want to hear Superman do those kind of things. not in the heat of a battle,
right?
As intense as this was, in the scene that it's in. You know, when you see the scene that's in, you can tell it doesn't fit. It's not, you know, a battle in the middle of Metropolis where he's, you know, about to punch a woman. It's not, you know, some like two-bit thug sticking somebody up. It's Steppenwolf beating the tar out of Wonder Woman. And all of a sudden, Superman, is this man bothering you? And grabbing him and flying off. It just doesn't, it didn't make any sense where it was. Yeah. It was just a very, very bizarre spot for it.
Yeah, it was really like, it was really not necessary for that. Like, it's just like, come in, help out where you need to help out and keep it moving. Like, I don't know. I feel like because Joss Whedon didn't have a lot of direction on the movie, he starts putting this stuff in to try and make up for lost time. And it just wasn't necessary. It wasn't necessary.
And it didn't fit.
Yeah.
And oddly, it wasn't the biggest part of that whole scene that I had the biggest issue with.
No.
So my biggest issue, and you know, I'll say my piece on this and I'll let you go because I've been yapping the most of the time. We talked about a little bit about you and I offline about The Flash. I'm not a big Ezra Miller fan to begin with. I've seen him in a couple other things. I wasn't a big fan.
Yeah.
I liked him in Fantastic Beasts. That's more or less it that I've seen him in so far.
Yeah.
I'm okay with his Barry Allen. I thought he might be a little too quirky, but I did like his Barry Allen. I did not like his Flash.
Yeah.
And we can get into more of that later if we need to. But
yeah.
My biggest issue with the whole scene at the end is you've got this bizarre Russian family of four that you've now shown a couple times in the movie for no reason other than just to show a Russian family in Russia. Little Baxter, Steppenwolf, and his parademons are in Russia. They've taken over, I believe it's an old nuclear reactor.
Yeah, it looked like Chernobyl.
Looks like Chernobyl, maybe, trying to have a place where they can put the mother boxes back together and use it to take over the world. For whatever reason, they have to do it here. I don't know why.
Right.
So you flash forward, no pun intended. That family is now in a truck, and they're trying to get out of the town, and there's this weird alien-like landscape thing that's taking over the whole town, and it's just the one piece is chasing the truck. So this one family, for some reason, Batman sends Barry after. Barry goes flying out of the town, manages to find the family. The truck is stalled. He pushes the truck the rest of the way out of the town, saves the family. You've now given the Flash his first real hero moment in the movie. His first real, this is him on his own, saving a family from imminent death, giving him that moment where he could sit back and go, I did good. And you take away from it, because you have him push the truck to the edge of town where he's safe, turn his head to see Superman carrying an entire building worth of people to take them to safety. And you completely destroy that entire moment that this guy, you've given this guy in the movie now, and make him look even more weak than he already looked as the Flash throughout most of the movie.
Right.
And I don't like, I absolutely hate doing that to another character, because you're essentially putting him down.
Yeah.
When it comes right down to it.
Yeah. And it's not
when,
like,
when you do it that way.
Yeah, it's not just them putting a character down. It's like basically they were really dead set and they doubled down on making Aquaman, The Flash, and Cyborg secondary characters. They were absolutely fine making them completely useless and in no way, shape, or form like useful to the big three. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you really don't feel like you need them at that point.
Yeah.
Because that was, and I'll make my last point and then I'll shut up, I promise. I was listening to the Kevin Smith podcast this morning, and he made a really excellent point. You never really know what Aquaman's powers are. In this final fight, he's jumping around, he's throwing his trident at people, but you don't have him anywhere near the water where he's supposed to be at his most powerful.
Right.
Like, to have it make, like, why is he even there? There's one part in the entire movie with him as a member of the Justice League where his ability to control water or have some kind of difference making with water takes place. One spot for like 10 seconds. the rest of the movie has nothing to do with him and his abilities. So why is he even there? What are his abilities? You know, the running gag throughout the entire movie is, so you can talk to fish? Huh? You can talk to fish? Never happens, which is fine. I don't care if you can talk to fish or not. But you never get an idea of exactly what he's able to do.
Yeah.
It would have made more sense to have them in some kind of Russian town near a shore or near some kind of body of water where he could have done something to bring creatures from the water to help fight the parademons or to take Steppenwolf into the water where he's supposed to be stronger and actually be able to fight him a little bit better. Something that would have made more sense for him to actually be there. Yeah. But as it is, there's no real feeling for why he's even there.
Yeah.
That's one of those things that didn't make sense to me also in this movie.
Yeah, it was just rough to see. It's just like you wanted this movie to succeed. You wanted it to be, you know, better than what everybody was kind of slating it off to be, and it just kind of it falls flat. And for me, like the biggest reason it falls flat is because of the way that the characters get treated. It's like, you know, regardless, the story seemed to be going somewhere. The story seemed to be going somewhere, and I'm super glad that it was just Steppenwolf that we worried about here and not Darkseid. Cause I was talking to my brother about it before, and he was just like, look, if Darkseid had showed up in this movie, I'd have walked out of the theater. Cause at that point, it's just like, you're shooting everything out without really solidifying a decent structure here, but you want this to be successful. And it's like, you're shooting yourself in the foot. That's Endgame story. So it's like, seeing Steppenwolf, okay, all right, we're going to focus with Steppenwolf. But, like, my biggest problem was just the way that they treated the characters. It's just like, we got so very little moments where we could actually see the potential of these new characters that we got. Cyborg is a big character. And his story is tragic, but his abilities are amazing in the fact that they're always adapting. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
They're always evolving. And it's like, we don't even get to see. We get to a little sample of that in the beginning where he's like, yeah, something's things are changing with me. And then he takes off and he's flying a little bit. He said, I couldn't do that yesterday. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's like, you kind of get like a brief sample, but you don't really know to the full extent in which Cyborg's abilities can really take shape. And then you get another sample of that near the end. And it's just like, you watch his structure change because his abilities are changing and evolving and adapting. You know what I'm saying? He's assimilating new technology and new experiences. You know what I'm saying? And then, so for me, I really wish they would have at least tried to treat this like, unfortunately, there's no other way to say it, like they did Justice League War, the animated one. It's like this, yeah. The first Justice League animated one of the new series that we're getting was a Cyborg vehicle. We focused on Cyborg as the main character that unified the Justice League and brought them together and gave them this information on the parademons and the coming threat of Darkseid. You know what I'm saying? So this was a real opportunity for them to explore at least one of the characters, because I feel like Flash and Aquaman should have got their own standalone movies way before this movie got into production. You know what I'm saying?
I agree.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, yeah, we should have got a Flash movie, get introduced to Barry. So, and this is the thing. If you do these things, when the movie Justice League comes around, you don't have to spend so much time trying to tell these pocket backstories. We didn't have to spend all of that time following Barry to Blackgate to check in with his dad. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
We don't have to watch that character development because that character development happened in the Flash standalone movie. We don't have to see Aquaman stumble upon Atlantis because he had no idea Atlantis existed. Like, he basically, like, the way that they showed this, he kind of stumbled upon this. And
yeah.
He talks to this other new character who we have no idea. General audiences have no idea who she is. But she's I can't remember her name. What's her name? Her name in the comics?
Mira, I think.
Mira, who's key to Arthur Curry's Aquaman storyline. Basically is like leading Atlantis right now, and we just get this little surface scratch of Atlantis Like, this is Atlantis, and this is, we could tell this is the first time that Aquaman's ever been there. This is the first time he's talked to anybody from Atlantis, and basically he's processing that his mom left him, but he has no idea to what depths and the reasons why she left him with his father. Like, all of this we're getting in the pocket of like a minute, when these deserve full feature length films. You know what I'm saying?
I think their biggest problem is they don't explain things well.
No.
They leave it up to you to try to figure out. There were so many things that happen in the movie that have no explanation. Like, all right, let's talk about some things that might sound silly, but they're for real. why can't they talk underwater?
Right.
Why do they have to create an air bubble so the two of them can sit and talk to each other? Why does it have to be? They're Atlanteans. They should be able to talk underwater.
Yeah.
Why is it when Superman is resurrected and all he's doing is standing still, staring at them, all of a sudden Cyborg's armor kicks into the gear without any control by him and attacks Superman for no reason?
Right.
Okay. Why is it that Clark Kent has now been dead for what? A year, 2 years, whatever that is, when the movie kicks in?
Yep.
Yet at the end of the movie, he's walking around Metropolis in the exact same gear he had in Batman versus Superman.
Like, nobody's going to recognize him.
Nothing happened. Nobody's going to recognize him. No explanation. No nothing. He's just walking around. They don't explain these things, and it doesn't make sense when it happens. You need to have some kind of explanation, some kind of understanding that people can follow. I realize the hardcores are going to get it, for the most part, they're going to get it. But somebody walking off the street who knows the movie because there's commercials everywhere and their kid wants to see it, the stuff's not going to make any sense. It doesn't fit. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So it doesn't surprise me that these things, people look at these things and they go, well, that's stupid. Why would you do that? Because I'm a guy who knows the stories and knows some of the details. And I say, that's stupid. Why would you do that?
Exactly.
You know, my understanding for Atlanteans, and now, again, I don't know the DC backstories as well, but I always thought maybe they were like mildly telepathic.
Oh, yeah.
So the reason they can speak to each other underwater is because they're telepathic. They can speak to each other that way.
Yeah.
They don't do that. They just create. So instead of having the two of them just stare at each other in the water and do voiceover, they create this air bubble so the two of them can stand and talk. They never explain who she is.
Nope.
So if you don't know, the character, you're not going to know why the hell you're sitting talking to her.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just these little details that need to be there for people to understand the movie better.
And appreciate those characters, man.
The most telling thing of all of it is the box office, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they predicted the movie. When the movie first was coming out, they predicted it to do $150 million its opening weekend. When it got closer to time, they dumped that to 110, 120. Mm-hmm. We only did 93.
Yeah.
It cost them 900, something like that. So that hurts.
Yep.
If you go strictly by box office, that's a flop. A big time bomb. And it's not going to get any better because this weekend they're going up against a Pixar movie for a holiday weekend. So they're not going to get a good box office this weekend because they're going to at least split it with Coco because parents are going to be taking their kids to go see the Pixar movie. So it's not going to recover well. You know, it's just not. That's the impression you get when you look at these things.
Yeah, I mean, even if you bank internationally, I don't see them making that money back. You know what I'm saying? I know a lot of people do the comparison. We do the comparison between Marvel and DC, but it's because they're telling, quintessentially the same stories. You know what I'm saying? Yep. So if you're thinking about team-ups, you're automatically going to think about Avengers. Avengers made $200 million on its opening weekend. $200
million. $200 million, yep.
And Justice League is barely scratching 100.
They did less than half. Yep.
It's like, yo, the proof is in the pudding. Like, nobody, like, people want stories. And if you're not giving them that, if you're poking more holes, and that's the thing, they poked more holes into their own movie than anybody else could have. You know what I'm saying?
You had what going into Avengers? 4 or 5 lead up movies?
Yeah.
Iron Man, Captain America, Thor, Iron Man 2, I think all led into the Avengers.
We knew
well, five characters. If you count the Hulk.
Yeah.
If you count the Hulk, that's five.
Yep. And we knew just all these characters leading up to this. So when we got into it, all you need to do is get straight story for Avengers.
Yep. Justice League had two. I can't count Suicide Squad because they're not part of the Justice League movie in any way. You had Man of Steel, you had Batman versus Superman. Neither of which was received all that well overall. Mm-hmm. It got praise from the hardcores, but it also got a lot of bad press. And that was the only thing you did trying to go into a combined superhero movie of five or six superheroes, three of which you never gave any explanation to.
Yep.
I'm sorry, three movies. Wonder Woman. Forgot about Wonder Woman.
Oh, yeah, Wonder Woman. Yeah. Which was their best, what they really should have led out with. They should have led the universe with Wonder Woman.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Which, you know, clearly, after watching this movie, that's who they want as their centerpiece. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't recall her ever being the lead for the Justice League, but they make it very clear in the movie that they want her to be the leader of the Justice League.
Yep.
They make it very clear that they want her to be the centerpiece. Makes sense. It's been their best movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, with the Marvel movies, they just, you had a better understanding of the characters going in. You had good backstories for Iron Man, for Captain America, for the Hulk, and for Thor. Four of the main characters in the movie you knew going in. Black Widow, you had from Iron Man 2, so you knew who she was. Mm-hmm. You knew most of her story because she was in almost the entire movie. Hawkeye, you didn't get very much of. He only made his one appearance in Thor. But he also shows up in Avengers immediately, at literally the very beginning of the movie, and proceeds to play an integral part in the movie where you start to learn who he is through the movie itself.
Yep.
You learn that he's a super spy. You learn that he works for S.H.I.E.L.D. You learn that he and Natasha have a history. You learn all these things as the movie goes on. They don't have to go real in depth, but he's also not a real deep character when it comes down to it. No offense to Hawkeye. But you had all that planned out. You had your main character, your Iron Man, through two movies as the main guy in both of those movies. So you knew what we were getting. I don't think there's anything else in between those before Avengers. But you knew at least four of the heavy hitters going into the movie. You had three movies going into Justice League, and the only two of them had their own movies, Superman and Wonder Woman. Batman had to split time with Superman and Batman v Superman, and all three of them don't need any kind of backstory. They're your heaviest hitters.
Yeah.
And we kind of talked about that. You know, I kind of stole from the other Kevin Smith podcast we were talking about before, where the guy said, and I won't use his exact explanation, but he explained it where DC is relying on the strength of the characters versus the strength of the story, whereas Marvel is working on the strength of the story versus the strength of the characters. Meaning, DC is going, we've got Superman, we've got Wonder Woman, we've got Batman. Everybody knows these three characters, more or less. You know their backstories, essentially. Maybe not so much Wonder Woman, but you know Superman's backstory, you know Batman's backstory. They're banking on the names bringing in people to the movie. When Marvel started, they started essentially with Iron Man, who was more or less a second-tier hero at the time. For Marvel, if you weren't Spider-Man, you weren't Wolverine, you weren't as well known by everybody outside of the comic world. But they did it just right, where they gave you the Thor movie, they gave you the Captain America movie, they gave you the Hulk movie, they gave you the Iron Man movies, and taught you everything you needed to know leading up to Avengers. And it was all about the story. It wasn't about the names. Couldn't be about the names because you don't know them as well.
Right.
But the stories were written so well and done so well that it didn't matter by the time you got to the Avengers because you knew who everybody was.
Yep.
You bring in these other three characters, Aquaman, Flash, and Cyborg, having shown them all once in another movie. Flash is the only one, I think, who showed up twice, and even the first time was only for 10 seconds in Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
There's no explanation of them previously. There's no solo movie for them. There's no upgrades. So how you expect people to be able to relate to these characters or have any kind of interest in them when they're not, if you're not a hardcore as far as the comics go, I don't get where their thought process is in that. I don't understand that.
Yeah, man.
It's like we said, you know, again, I kind of took this from their podcast and wholeheartedly agreed with it. DC needs that Kevin Feige. They need the guy who's going to sit back, look at all the movies and say, look, here's our overall story arc. Here's where we're going. Here's A, here's Z, here's everything in between. Your movies need A, B, and C. They can't touch on X, Y, and Z. Everything else is up to you. There's nobody to kind of hold that cohesion of the movies together, and they're just kind of stumbling over each other when it comes down to it. And it really is just kind of a mess.
Yeah, it's killing the franchise. It's really killing the franchise. And it's like, you know, just to bring everything kind of like to a wrap on this, but it's like, when you hear news in the Marvel world as far as, you know, future directors and things like that, and then people leaving because of creative differences, these are the biggest reasons why these plans fall through. It's because, hey, look, we have A, B, and C. This is what you can deal with. You cannot deal with X, Y, and Z. And if the director's like, oh, well, I kind of wanted to deal with X, Y, Z, well, this is probably not going to be a good fit then, because we need to tell this story the way it needs to be told. With this amount of information. And it's because they have that control and they have that plan, they kill it. They execute it every time. And, you know, DC is just going to fall short because they don't have that Kevin Feige figure.
Right.
Yeah.
They don't have that somebody watching over saying, this is where we need to go from here. Here, I'll let you know. You take the reins, but make sure you head this direction. Yeah. You know, they don't have a GPS, as it were.
Yeah.
For the DC world. So,
yep.
It's unfortunate because they've got some good foundation with some of the characters. You know, the Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman is fantastic, I think. I think Ray Fisher as Cyborg is good. I think he needs a little more expanding.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he doesn't really get a whole lot of chance to be Cyborg in this movie or to give you much to go by, but I think he would be very good. Somebody needs to teach Ezra Miller how to run.
Yo, my man was so flicked. Oh. Like, I could really do a whole podcast on how wrong his execution of the Flash was. It was just bad.
He's a very good Barry Allen. I think he's a little over the top as far as the quirkiness goes. I think he could use to tone that down a little bit.
Yeah.
I think, and maybe it's spoiled watching Grant Gustin and really, really liking the way Grant Gustin portrays the character.
Because we got to watch Barry grow. We got to watch him grow for like three seasons now. It's been three seasons, So it's like, we're spoiled, man. Like, you got to come harder than that.
But his Flash, look, ultimately when it comes right down to it, his Flash is a big pussy. He's afraid of everything. He doesn't know how to be a hero. He doesn't know what he's doing. You know, and it's like they need to have him have a little bit of confidence. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you can't have him have confidence when you're having him shown up by Superman every turn in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, I don't know. That particular character portrayal wasn't very good. I like Momoa as an actor. I do. I think he's fun in some of the stuff he does.
Yeah.
I don't think it's the right, for me, and it's just maybe it's me being picky, but I don't think it's the right portrayal of Aquaman as, you know, like a surfer dude. But by far not the worst part of the movie, for sure.
Yeah, definitely not. And I mean, I'd be interested, and it's not like I'm not going to stop watching DC movies because I'm interested to see how Aquaman gets delivered. You know what I'm saying? But it's just, for me, this one was not... It wasn't their worst effort, but it definitely wasn't their best. And it's not giving me any kind of vote of confidence to believe that this movie or this franchise is something that I can see not needing a Flashpoint. Like, we need the timeline to be changed. We need it.
Yeah. And I think that's going to happen. I think they'll use Flashpoint as a way to recast. I mean, clearly they're giving Affleck his out that he wants, because part of the movie is him talking with Wonder Woman about, you know, I can't do this forever. You know, it literally, I think, is a line he says in the movie.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, so they're very clearly going to give him his out. Now, is he going to stay in the movie and maybe play the guy behind the scenes? Like the guy who prepares everything from the Hall of Justice, and somebody else will be Batman? Potentially could happen, maybe. Yeah. Yeah. I doubt it. You know, what was the other thing that was so funny with Kevin Smith? he was talking about the suit he wears at the end and how ridiculous the bat armor looked, and it really did. You know, he called him the Michelin Man at one point, and it's kind of hard to argue because he looked huge. It looked like he was wearing 18 layers of bat suit.
Yeah, it was cold outside.
You know? That's right. Yeah. He didn't have his bat.
All I know is it beats bat nipples. So, you know.
Well, this is true. Well, yeah, this is very true. But, you know, it's unfortunate because there was a lot of potential with what they had going, and I think they just dropped the ball.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I think that's a good place to pretty much end it right there. So, I mean, you got our thoughts. Basically, it's just, you know, it's a go see it. If it's fanfare, you know what I'm saying? If you're a fan of the franchise, you'll definitely have some good, solid moments, enough to get through the bad moments. But for general audiences, this is a tough pill to swallow. So, you know, I would just wait. Yeah, I would wait for the DVD, wait for the director's cut if we get that, you know what I'm saying, and see where it goes from there, you know? So.
Yeah, I don't argue with that. I agree with that.
Yeah. So that does it for our review of the Justice League here at the Boss's Desk, man. If you're tuning in for the first time, don't forget to follow us on all the various social media outlets. We're on Facebook under the Boss's Desk, Twitter at the Boss's Desk, and YouTube, the Boss's Desk. We're also on iTunes and Google Play. You can search for our podcast there. And just, you know, stay tuned. Follow us. We keep with regular reviews, and we keep with regular news updates, and so we'll release those to you when we get them. And so that's it for us here today at the Boss's Desk, man, guys, and we'll catch you next week.
See ya.